525 downtown Tuesday, and it's time to talk wine. We do it every week at this time. Message in the Bottle brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor, right between Brahma Grill and Fiddlehead Restaurant. And Crossroads Beverage Company, 66 Main Street in Newport, right behind the Rite Aid, just off the Moosehead Trail. Eric Meehan with us in studio.
Mm-hmm. Happy opening day.
Yes, indeed. Thank you much. Nice win for the Red Sox.
All's right
with the world.
It's true. I was raised a Philly fan. Don't hold that against me.
Wow. Well, good luck this year.
Yeah. There's other sports that are more important to me, and thank God for that.
Philly's got a national championship in college basketball.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I would have loved to see that scene last night. That must have been... That's sheer madness.
A little wild on the main line.
Good
last
times,
night.
Though.
Yeah.
Good times. Cool. Well, hey. So we're in a new month. So we're talking about it. We have a new message, and we're talking all month about cooking. And I figured I'd expand it because, of course, at Bangor Wine and Cheese and Crossroads Beverage, we do not just sell wine. We do massive amounts of craft beer and also ciders and meads, which are, you know, much like craft beer was several years ago, was sort of a small niche. Fast-growing niche. So I figured we could talk a little bit about cooking with all these sorts of things, some of the myths, misconceptions, things like that, and also talk about a specific bottle that day, of course, like we always do, and then pair it up with a nice recipe that we could then put on the internet for everybody to check out.
I like it.
Right, so all sorts of stuff that we'll talk about. So we are starting off with wine today, and cooking with wine is obviously a very classic thing, but it's a thing that people don't really understand and conceptualize for a lot of the same reasons. Like, by people, I sort of mean we here in America, because of course people in other parts of the world have really honed in on how to cook with various alcohols. I think much like America's slower nature to pick up on the nuances of wine, because we're just a newer culture and civilization, essentially, that you have a lot of people who don't quite know what it is to cook with wine, just like a lot of people out there don't really know what it is to cook with a lot of different spices. You know, I mean, there's salt and pepper, then there's everything else to a lot of people, and you know, there's a lot of nuance contained in that. The first and absolute rule is don't buy anything labeled cooking wine. Serious. I mean, and I'm guilty of it. You know, when I was young and I had no other idea, I definitely went home with, you know, a bottle of, actually, this is a true story. If anybody ever feels bad about how cooking with wine or whatever, when I was younger, I was an opera singer. And actually, when I was still an undergrad, I went to sing for the Glimmerglass Opera Chorus, and I was alone in my parents' little summer house that I was crashing in while I was doing that, and I said, I'm going to cook for myself. And I went and got a piece of salmon, and I said, well, you know, they marinate fish in wine, right? So I went and I got a bottle of wine, and I marinated the fish in it. It was a bottle of red wine. It was a bottle of red cooking wine.
Oh, dear.
Fortunately, when I took it out of the refrigerator, having marinated it for an hour or so, I knew better instinctively and called Sal's Pizza, and that's what I had that night. So, you know, I learned quick. Those things are out there, and it's not anybody's fault that you're buying something called cooking wine when you think, oh, I'm cooking, and I'll be, you know, that's what I buy, along with, you know, it's in the spice aisle like everything else.
But like every other ingredient when you're cooking, you want it to be high quality, not the cheapest stuff possible.
Well, and that's absolutely true, but a lot of people don't think that far, you know, ahead. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am very, you know, all these things that we're going to be talking about, wine, beer, cider, mead, they're agricultural products, right? And if you're going to have lettuce, do you want lettuce to be old and wilted, or do you want it fresh? I mean, the same sort of thing. You want it fresh and vibrant, and it's going to make your food fresh and vibrant, or it's going to make your food taste terrible, which I can only imagine what that salmon might have tasted like.
Ooh.
But again, I didn't experience it, thank God. So I always tell people that classic line of, you know, don't cook with anything you wouldn't drink. But the problem, and what we're going to be talking about specifically today, is that a lot of the wines that people liked to drink when a lot of the recipes that we're still making today were being made weren't exactly what they are in real life. What do I mean by that? So especially here in America, a lot of Americans' first taste of wine and the wine culture came when they were sent overseas in the military. And this continues today. I mean, I'm sure, Sarah has stories of her husband's cohorts saying, oh, I just got back from Germany and I love German wines now, or things like that. So a lot of these soldiers went and were in major wine producing regions of France and Germany and in major beer regions like Belgium and, were intermingling with people from Great Britain who had their own beer culture and things like that. And they were having these wines. And then when they came back, they wanted that experience, but there wasn't any sort of demonstrable legal protection on the names of these places. So you had places like Chablis, which is a region of Burgundy, France, and you have Burgundy, France, and you have the wine we're going to taste today, which is a Sauterne, which is a French dessert wine from the Bordeaux region. Very, very famous, very, very high-quality wines, but a lot of California wine growers, especially some that are still around, like Gallo, and some that have gone the way of the Dodo, like Petri is one that I always remember, started making these wines in California and then slapping names on them from the old world. So to this day, you can still buy a jug of Chablis, or Hardy Burgundy, which I assure you has nothing to do with the region in France. But they did that because they knew that there was this brand new American market for these regions. And a lot of them were sweet. People still come in and say, oh, Chablis is a sweet wine, right? No, the jug Chablis is sweet. But real Chablis is Chardonnay, and it's dry and minerally. Likewise, Sauterne. So why I chose Sauterne? So many people come into my shops and have, over the history of my working in the wine industry and said, I need a bottle of Sauterne. Okay, great. Come on over here. This one is, $35. This one's $80. This one's $110. I'm like, oh, my. I'm just putting this in. I'm poaching a pear in it. Right. Okay. So I take them back and I say, a lot of these, Betty Crocker recipes, even the Julia Child, the stuff like that, they were using wines that aren't necessarily the real thing. And of course, inflation being what it is, even if they were, like Julia might have actually had some access. She trained in France. She might have actually had access to these real things, but they didn't cost what they cost now. So very often I am finding myself trying to find alternative solutions for people who just want to go home and make a nice meal for their family and friends that aren't going to cost an arm and a leg. Now, the bottle I brought in today, and as I said, it's a Sauternes, which is Sauternes. It's a dessert wine from the Bordeaux region of France. And the one I brought today and another one that we'll be bringing in about a week and a half are actually semi-affordable. But this one is still like a $30-plus bottle for a half a bottle. It's a 375 milliliter. A lot of dessert wines you see in half bottles because, frankly, they are so expensive to produce, A, and B, you don't really drink a lot of it. I mean, as we're all going to taste it today, but I tried to put, sort of a reasonable amount because it's very viscous. It's sugary. I mean, it's a sweet wine. Also, most of the great sweet wines can age beautifully, so it's something to consider. And the other nice thing is for a lot of people who don't want to drink the whole bottle in one sitting, the more sugar a bottle tends to have, the more it can kind of keep. So a lot of sweeter Rieslings, dessert wines like this, you can recork them and go back to it, the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks even, and it'll still be a really impressive wine. So that's pretty cool, especially if somebody wants like a nice little dessert wine at the end of the night. So really quick, just to sum up that part before we delve into drinking this delicious liquid, just want people to remember that, if you go in with a given recipe and your wine merchant says, be willing to listen to what they have to say because there's going to be good dessert wine alternatives, perhaps from other regions that weren't even on the map at that point. For instance, South America is turning out some really interesting dessert wines, like Uruguay and things like that are turning out some styles like this that are absolutely gorgeous. So anyway, so what are we drinking right now? And I invite us all to swirl and enjoy. So what makes Sauternes Sauternes? So Sauternes is made out of the grape called Semillon. Many of you maybe have had dry Semillon, but mostly it's used in more viscous dessert-style wines.
Well, it's the greatest wine I've ever had.
It's the greatest wine he's ever had.
Yes.
There you go.
It's delicious.
See, we're winning. It's also affected by something called noble rot, which is also known as botrytis. Mm-hmm. But it is a form of rot that actually is good, hence noble. But can develop alongside of bad forms of rot and mildew, and so it's if you're going to try to achieve this form of rot, you're really risking a lot of your crop, and so you've got to have top pickers to be out there and grab the grapes when this is happening. And it happens obviously in places where there is a fair amount of moisture to allow that to happen, and it introduces this very sort of heady quality that you're getting right now.
Very smooth, too.
Very, very smooth. And that's the sugar, too. I mean, the palate likes that that sugary, sweet, smooth quality. But it's just tremendous. And honestly, I mean, if you had had this in 50 years, it would still be an extraordinarily fresh, interesting drinking experience.
You know what I really like is, I don't mean to talk out my top hole about stuff that I don't know about, but like the way that after I swallow it, like the exhaust breath, like the way that it tastes coming out, the breath coming out my nose is so sweet.
Mm.
It's like I ate a sugar cookie.
Well, yeah. It is, yeah.
So the recipe that I thought for this one, this is from a very famous chef named Joël Robuchon, and this is lobster in Sauterne.
Oh my.
Right. So a lot of fruit, you'll find fruit recipes for poaching, and we were talking about Chef Trevor here at Seasons maybe getting his hand on something like this and doing like poached pear, which he does a lot of poached pear for a lot of the wine dinners we've done. But this is one where, of course, we're here in Maine, and so this is a really classic whole body lobster dish that you then cook with a little bit of sauterne, orange juice, onions, carrots. So and then it presents beautifully, and it incorporates that really nice fruity sweet essence that you are enjoying in just such a beautiful way.
Wow!
And I was saying I'd totally make this at home, but it would kill my wife, so that would be bad. I need to keep her around for all sorts of reasons. a really nice alternative. And as I said, I will post this on the Bangor Wine and Cheese and Crossroads Beverage site as well, so that people, if they're interested, it's not a hard recipe at all, and it will make you look like a champ. And then also, please, grab the wine and enjoy.
Yeah, if I could drink this while I was cooking the dish, too, it would make it even better.
I think that would help. Word to the wise, and this is a very sugary wine, and if you drink a lot of it, you will regret it the next day. I have seen it. So, absolutely.
Why is he looking directly at you, Ryan?
No.
What he's doing is seeing my future.
Seeing the future.
He has so many skills and seers.
Right.
Exactly. Seer-seeing is one of them now.
Awesome. And, of course, before we wrap up, I do want to mention that we have our monthly tastings coming up on the second week. This time, so the 13th and 15th, because it'll be school vacation and also Le Boheme prep week for me the following week. And also, if anybody wants to go see me and all these other amazing people in Le Boheme, buy your tickets now because they're basically almost gone.
Wow.
And I'd love to see you April 24th for that. And next week, I think we're going to do beer and beer brownies.
God bless America.
I'm telling you.
Looking forward to it.
All right.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese and Crossroads Beverage Company. Message in the bottle every single Tuesday here on Downtown. It's 5:38. A quick pause. Still to come, the good, the bad, the ugly. Our friend Dennis Price, the calendar.